Hello, friends. Ooh, how are you? This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron is, I really enjoy this sponsor because I like hearing back from people that try things out that wouldn't ordinarily have done it. I like when people step outside their comfort zone. For a lot of people, that comfort zone is cooking your own meals. We like to go to restaurants, or we like to cook something really simple, like a can of SpaghettiOs or something. You know, some people are just not inclined to get involved in cooking something, but then you feel like you want to mix it up. Well, if you want to mix it up and you want to create really healthy, delicious meals and do it in a pretty simple-to-follow way, Blue Apron's your way to go. It's awesome. What they do is they send you all the ingredients. They send them to you in a cooler. It's all packed in there. They're all in the right proportions. And then they also send you these step-by-step instructions. The recipes, like the all the portions are measured out, so all you have to do is follow these photographic step-by-step recipe instructions. It's super easy to do. You really can't fuck it up. And the meals are delicious. They're about 500 or 700 calories per serving. They taste really good, and they're unusual tasting. There's like a bunch of like really cool flavors. They're not like really simple meals. Like I'll read you some of the different foods that they send you these recipes for, different recipes. Korean bao, ground turkey, quick cucumber kimchi, seared salmon with preserved lemon and quinoa, sliced pork steak with smashed potatoes and strawberry rhubarb compote. I mean, this is delicious shit. This is like complicated stuff. Like if you served this to somebody, they would be super impressed with you. They'd be like, God damn, Jamie, how did you learn how to fucking cook like this? You're amazing. Such an amazing man. For less than $10 a meal, Blue Apron sends you the fresh ingredients perfectly proportioned, making cooking healthy meals really easy and fun. Really, and no trips to the grocery store, no waste from unused ingredients. Plus, you'll learn to cook with specialty ingredients that are normally hard to find. So check out this week's menu and get your first two meals for free by going to blueapron.com/Rogan. My treat, two meals are on me. They say that, but it's not really my treat. It's like if you go there, you can get the two meals. How about I'll just say that instead of saying it? It's a great service, though, and I use it all the time. So blueapron.com/Rogan. Go cook yourself some yummy food, son or daughter or what have you. July 10th, I'm going to be at the Ka Theater again, the MGM in Vegas, with Tony Hinchcliffe and Tom Segura. We did it in May, and it was fucking awesome. It's really cool. It's where they do the Cirque du Soleil, the Ka show there. That's July 10th, and then July 24th, I'm at the Chicago Theater in Chicago, Illinois, and I'm with Tony Hinchcliffe there. Looking forward to that as well. So that's it for those. We are also brought to you by Ting. Ting is the official cell phone provider of the Joe Rogan Experience. One of these days I'm going to say that normal, right? Instead of just doing it, I feel weird about saying my own name. Ting is a great mobile service that uses the Sprint backbone, and now they also have GSM service, which I'm 99% sure they use the T-Mobile band. And what they do is the way they, at least it's the exact same frequencies that T-Mobile uses. I don't know how all that shit works. But what they do that I really like is they provide you with major company service like Sprint or T-Mobile, but they do so in a way that I should probably be sure that they're on the T-Mobile lines before I say that. They are? Yeah. Okay. See, this is in real time. I'll leave this in the goddamn commercial. I'm pretty sure. I was like 99% sure. $23 is the average monthly bill per device for Ting customers. And this is why. What Ting does is, say if you only use 13 minutes this month, just for whatever reason, you say, I'm not calling anybody, fuck them. You pay for those 13 minutes only. You don't pay for the 100 minutes that you might be allotted every month. And there's no overage fees in that way as well. Like if you go over your time, well, you don't have any time. You pay for whatever the hell you use it. It's a great way to do it, and it's a way that should have been done a long time ago. Most of us are leaving money on the table when you have a contract, and that contract is for X amount of minutes per month. Most of the time, you don't use those minutes, and you're not credited for them. What Ting does is very simple. You use what you pay for. And they have some great devices. They have all the cool daddy-o Android phones. They have Apple iPhones. You can bring unlocked Apple iPhones over to it. And they have the Samsung Galaxy S6 Edge, which is pretty dope. Samsung just got me one of those. They have the regular Galaxy S6 as well. Pretty slick phones, man. These new Galaxy phones are just as nice, and they feel just as good, like, in your hands as any iPhone. It's really interesting to see the competition making everybody step up and make these satisfying devices. But the point being that what they do at Ting, too, is they sell you the device. That is yours. Once you pay, there's no hidden fees. If it's $81 for a One Touch Evolve 2, that's what the fuck it costs. And once you pay that, then it's yours. Normally, when you get a cell phone from a provider, if it says, you know, $400, whatever the hell dollar it is to buy this phone, it really costs more than that. But what you're doing is you're going to pay the remainder of it off over a long period of time, like the extent of your contract. So it makes it cheaper for you. It makes it look like it's cheaper for you until you try to leave. With Ting, you don't have any contracts. There's no early termination fees. You just leave. It's beautiful. All right, go to rogan.ting.com and save $50. That's the new promo codes because they're in full swing with GSM, so they're making it even juicier. It used to be $25, now it's $50. So go to rogan.ting.com. We're also brought to you by onnit.com each and every week, my friends. Onnit, the total human optimization website. Go to the Onnit Academy and learn some shit. Like, how about cheese is probably good for you? I don't know if it's good for you. There's an article about cheese there. There's an article on marijuana, while we're all inherently potheads. This episode is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. If you're looking for something to do this summer, you might want to check out some of the upcoming fights. Even better, if you can catch them up close in person. It's quite an experience. But if you want to get the best seats, you have to act fast. And that's true for a lot of things in life, especially when it comes to hiring for your business. You need to hire the most talented people you can before the competition scoops them up. And to do that, you need ZipRecruiter. And luckily, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Rogan. Got your eye on a rock star candidate? ZipRecruiter's invite to apply feature lets you cut the line. Once you review ZipRecruiter's list of the most qualified candidates for your job, you can easily invite your top choices to apply to encourage them to apply sooner. So, amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Rogan to try it for free right now. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/Rogan. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. The Onnit Academy is a really interesting aspect of the site and the business in that there's a lot of really intelligent, unique people contributing, really cool stories, great workouts, advice, diet, inspirational videos. There's all kinds of cool shit there, and it gets you fired up. And then there's actually a real Onnit Academy in Austin, Texas, with amazing facilities, all state-of-the-art equipment, really great instructors, cool staff. It's a really exciting place to work out. And it sort of embodies what we're trying to do at Onnit. And what we're trying to do is give people all the tools to optimize their life, to get their body to work, perform, and feel better, to get your brain to work, perform, and feel better, to get your moods in the proper order, to get your body and your brain tuned up, get it tuned in together. It's what we're trying to achieve. If you go to Onnit and use the code word Rogan, you will save 10% off any and all supplements. Okay, fucks. This podcast was with me and Cameron Haynes. This is a podcast we did in a car. I mean, really, it's kind of pretentious even calling it a podcast. It's a conversation that we had on my iPhone that I'm going to release online because we wanted to talk about we were coming back from a successful hunt. And Cameron is a very famous bow hunter. So if you're not into any of that and that kind of stuff bums you out, you don't have to listen to this podcast. Why would I even have to say that? Like, you don't have to listen to. That's, I'm a ridiculous person. Don't mind me. So this is what the podcast is. It's a conversation between two dudes coming back from bear hunting. So that's it. So ladies and gentlemen, my friend Cameron Haynes.
Joe Rogan Podcast. Check it out.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan Podcast by night. All day.
Down right there. I'm
yeah.
In a car right now with Cameron Haynes, Rick Carone, Jenny Rivet.
Rick's on the camera.
Rick's on the camera. I got this recording too. I'm going to release this as an audio podcast. And we're coming back right now from a successful bear hunt in Alberta. Good times up there, up in the middle of the woods. And we were just talking about the contradictions, like the things that people hate on hunting and how ridiculous it is. And one of the ones that drives me the most crazy is people that claim that they're animal lovers, and so they get really mad at you for hunting, but they have pets. And you know, like, what do you feed these pets? Like, what do you think this food grows on a dog food tree? What do you think cats eat?
It doesn't.
Yeah, you're buying some animal that somebody captured. I mean, they probably have them in cages somewhere, pens, and then they kill them, and they grind them up, and they turn them into dog food. And those people will claim that what you're doing by going out in the wild and getting an animal is either unethical or immoral or terrible. And those contradictions, those, like, the ones that are right in front of your face, those have always puzzled me. About people.
Which the pursuit of what we were just doing is so much more pure than whatever goes into the dog food or the factory farming or whatever. But first, before we get into that, what about the hunt?
It was an awesome hunt. Got two bears. One the day before last and one yesterday. It was awesome. Very exciting. Very crazy. And the meat was delicious. Jenny cooked it up. Taught me a new recipe. How to do, what did you put in it? You stir fried it, but what did you put in it? What were the ingredients?
Some bacon, onions, peppers, a whole bunch of spices.
It was awesome.
All anybody who was eating it was raving about how good it was. Whatever deer or elk steak you've had before, it would rival that.
It's really good.
Such good bear meat. I mean, bear meat has a stigma a little bit, but it is, it prepared right, just as Jen proved. Amazing food.
Well, I wrote that thing on social media, the hierarchy of dead animals on social media, and that, like, the one that no one cares about is chopped up fish. Like, if you have a slice of fish, like a fillet of fish, it doesn't bother them.
Live. That's a life, right?
It is a life.
Okay.
But as long as it's a piece that's already cut up, we're so desensitized, we're so used to that being in a package, in styrofoam, at the supermarket, we don't think of it as being something that somebody killed.
The Filet-O-Fish sandwich.
Filet-O-Fish sandwich. Well, who knows what that is, right? It's a square.
Allegedly it's fish, I think.
It's somehow mashed into a square. That's the same weight every time. Doesn't make any sense, right?
I've never caught a Filet-O-Fish sandwich
in the wild.
No, in the wild.
They're very crafty. Only McDonald's knows how to wrangle those suckers. So then there's dead fish, which some people get a little more squeamish. You see the actual fish. And then there's things like pigs that people really don't care too much about. Wild boar, people kind of get grossed out by them. Turkeys, nobody gives a shit about turkeys. We've already talked about this.
I don't, but even anti-hunters don't. So they're just like, yeah, I think because they're so ugly, who cares if they're dead? It's kind of what the anti-hunters, you know, we talked about it. The more beautiful the animal,
yeah,
the more outraged.
Yeah.
Is that it, kind
of? There's a lot of that, for sure. Well, with bears are one of the big ones. And I think there's a couple reasons for that. I think, one, people associate bears with trophy hunting. And I know one of the things about you is that you eat everything you kill.
Yeah.
And I think that's important. I really do. I mean, I don't have any problem with people that want to go and shoot some weird animal because they want to make a collection, you know? Because I know that there's, in conservation money, a lot of those animals, there's a reason why their populations are thriving. And that's the case in Africa. The Louis Theroux podcast, or podcast that I did, but it's his documentary that he did on those African hunting ranches.
Yeah.
People that hate those ranches, when you find out about it, it's not that clear cut. There's a lot of weirdness to that whole thing, because there's animals that were on the verge of extinction that are now thriving, and the only reason why they're thriving is because they have a dollar value to them.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's value to the animals here in the United States also. And,
sure.
And hunters are the ones that, and as we've covered a million times on my podcast with you, I'm sure you talked about it with Jim Shockey, and any hunter you have on, you talk about the positive impact of hunting and hunters' money. It's, you know, I don't know, so you go beyond all that. You go beyond the challenge and the hunt. What I liked about this hunt for you, and you can still talk about your hierarchy of animal kills if you want, but you talked about, I want to just touch on the intensity of the moment. Mm. You know, this hunt, yeah, it is about, you're taking a cooler full of meat home. We ate meat at camp, and it was amazing. But there's just that primal instinct of being in the woods. We're in close. We hadn't had, you know, because of the weather and the moon and all sorts of factors, we weren't seeing the bear like we had in the past. And so all this anxiety's building, all this time's passing, and you're wondering, are we going to see anything? And then as, you know, basically dusk is approaching, we see our first bear. And so then all of a sudden, it's a race against the clock. And what you talked about, the intensity, or, you know, or what that feels like, you can't mimic that feeling in regular life, right?
No, you can't. And You also know that there's something about when you come to full draw on an animal, you can't pull that arrow back once it's released. And there's a decision that you have to make where you're lining up the shot and you're making sure that your fundamentals are in order, your technique is good, and the animal's moving, by the way. The animal's not cooperating, has no idea it's even participating in this little experiment, and you got to make a good shot.
Yeah, it's discipline.
It is discipline, and, you know, thankfully, every animal I've shot so far with a bow I've killed, but that's there's a lot involved in that. That's a lot of practice. I mean, I shot at least 190 arrows yesterday, at least.
Yeah.
We're just practicing over and over and over again, and everybody else in camp was doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Everybody's practicing. For hours we practiced, all for that one moment where that bear's right in front of you, and he turns broadside, and you get that perfect shot. And that feeling is crazy. It's so primal, and there's nothing that mimics it. And then when the arrow goes, like I was telling Jen after we shot the bear last night, like right after it happened, I go, I don't even feel like that happened. It didn't feel like it happened.
Yeah.
It felt fake. It felt like a dream or something. You know, it's weird.
Yeah. Well, it does happen so quickly. What happens, I think, with a lot of new archers, new bow hunters, is that's exactly right. The animal comes in, all the practice they put in, sometimes it's so intense, and as we've alluded to, regular life doesn't prepare you for those type of moments. I know as a new bow hunter, I would come back, shoot, not even be certain which pin I used if the animal was there, and just be like, what the heck just happened?
Yeah.
What happened? I don't remember anything, and you got to try to piece it together, and it's just, that's where the fundamentals come in. And, you know, as we were sitting there that first night, or the third night of the hunt, actually, and the bear came in, you know, you get there, you get cold, you start putting on more clothes, you get gloves on, you get a hood on, and then the bear comes in, and I was asking you, I was like, you shot with your glove on before? And you know, I just wanted to make sure, because it doesn't seem like a big deal. It's a big deal. When the line between success and failure on an animal when you're using a razor sharp broadhead can be this thin sometimes. A glove, doing something a little bit different when you shoot, that can be the difference. And on your bear, fatal shot, died quickly, but it wasn't exactly where you'd hoped it would be, even though you shot thousands and thousands of reps, you know, over the last 2 years, who knows how many shots, and it was only at 15 yards, and still, it wasn't a perfect shot.
No, it was slightly back, and so we weren't sure what had happened. We heard the thing run and then crash, and then we heard the death moan about 30 seconds later, so we knew it was dead. but we didn't know where. And so then we had to go on the blood trail. And by then, I shot the bear at about, it was about dark. It was just turning dark.
Yeah.
So from then on. It
was still legal light, however.
It was legal light. It was legal light. But I have these lighted knocks, which means like when the bow releases the arrow, the knock where the arrow hits the string, it lights up, which is really cool. So you could see exactly the path of the arrow. So I could see where it hit. If I didn't have lighted knocks, it would just be, I don't know where it hit. It would just be guessing.
That's a big advantage because there's been kind of even in Oregon, lighted knocks, where I'm from, lighted knocks aren't legal. And it doesn't give you an advantage.
No.
It helps. You know, just like that, we knew, I was watching the binoculars, we knew immediately a little bit back.
Yeah.
So that kind of, that plays into the approach we're going to take on the animal and tracking it. But knowing where that animal hits is huge. Anyway, we knew you're a little bit back.
Yeah, we saw the arrow go through the night and right into the bear.
Yeah.
Through the, it was like dusk.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then we went, tracked it down, took a long time, and found it. And Cam carried it out on his shoulders, covered in blood, all the way down the back of his pants. It was a huge relief to find the animal.
It's all mental.
It's all mental, he says. That's the theme of this week.
What? Stay tuned for those shirts.
Yeah, that's the next shirt. It's all mental, including doing things that you probably shouldn't do, like having bear blood on your hand and eating chips. It's all mental.
It pretty much encompasses everything in life.
It's all mental.
I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, but it was, you know, tracking that bear. So we're on our hands and knees through thick, thick brush, you know, looking for pinpricks of blood. Because even though, I mean, we knew the bear was dead, but we walked down there and I told Joe, I'm like, we got to get on the blood trail. We heard the death moan, but it'd been about 200 yards away. And we're like, I said, he could be anywhere. We could be 5 yards from him and not know. So we had to get back on the blood trail and unravel that thing. And that's a big part of bow hunting also. That's a, you know, a huge part of bow hunting, and it's woodsmanship. It's learning how to unravel blood trail, where to look for blood, depending on where the arrow hits, where that blood's going to either wipe on a tree, how it's going to splatter, how it's going to drip, if it's going to run down the leg. You know, bear don't have a hoof like a deer or elk, so they're not leaving a real print. So it was difficult, but, you know, I think about midnight, we finally recovered that bear, and we rejoiced.
Yeah, it's interesting because when we first started looking for it, we could still see. It was still bright enough that we could see through the woods, and we were trying to look for it. And then we realized, you know what? We better start from scratch. We better, because we kind of knew, we heard it drop and we heard the moan, so we knew it was in an area. When we say moan, for people who don't know, when bears die, they most of the time they make a real audible moan.
It can be pretty haunting in dark woods. You hear this, everybody well knows. That sounds more like Sasquatch.
No, Sasquatch is like this.
Okay. So what if we actually can kill Sasquatch? I wonder what he'd do.
He'd probably be like, dude, what the fuck? I'm just a guy out here.
Yeah, with this costume on. We're trying to make a TV show.
I'm just working with Les Stroud out here in the woods, trying to make some money.
You just shot my ass. Thank you.
What we were talking about, the stigma attached to bear hunting, is that Steve Rinella coined this phrase, charismatic megafauna. And is there certain
animals... That's a hell of a phrase, by the way.
That's Rinella. He's very articulate.
If you had that on a shirt, it would take up a lot of space.
Yeah, it's not...
Steve, you got to shorten that stuff up. We got to keep it simple.
Yeah, if you want to have shirts that sell well on social media.
You're not going to sell any of those.
But it's all mental. People can get behind that.
There you go.
Charismatic megafauna.
This episode is brought to you by SimpliSafe. With summer coming up, I bet a lot of you have plans to travel, which is great. You should get out and experience the world. But I also know how stressful traveling can be. That's why I want to recommend SimpliSafe. It provides award-winning security and peace of mind so you can have one less thing to worry about when you're away from your home this summer. I think SimpliSafe is a great option for home security because it protects your whole home, inside and out. It has a variety of cameras and sensors to detect the worst of the worst, including fires, floods, break-ins, and more. SimpliSafe has your back, and I especially like how there's no contracts and a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you can try it out confidently and really see if SimpliSafe is a good fit for you and your place. Everyone deserves to have peace of mind when they're away from home, and SimpliSafe can help give you that. So try it out today. Right now, get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system with Fast Protect monitoring at simplisafe.com/Rogan. That's simplisafe.com/Rogan. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
Sounds like an indie band from Seattle.
I bet Caitlin would wear one of those.
She probably would. Note how I said she. We're talking about Bruce Jenner. I did the
and it's Caitlin with a C.
Yes. Is that not normal?
No, I got that wrong yesterday.
Oh, they usually use K?
No, I said something, or I typed it, and it was like, with the K, and they're like, no, C, get it right.
Well, you can't commit to it because she might change tomorrow and decide to be Debbie. You know, once you live 65 years as Bruce, and then one day you're Caitlin, all bets are off.
Yeah, you don't know what
she can do. Whatever the fuck she wants.
Yeah,
or he, or whatever. He prefers he, by the way, in that interview. Whatever. We're getting off track.
The megafauna.
Yeah, that people have this idea, first of all, because of movies where bears are your friends. You know, Yogi Bear and Boo Boo and, you know, Winnie the Pooh. We have all these ideas about bears being these, you know, our buddies. They're not. They're big predators that are almost all cannibals. They eat their babies. It's very, very, very common. And it's one of the reasons why you have to hunt these male boars to keep the population healthy. And it seems counterintuitive. You think like, well, if you're killing animals, that's bad for the population. But it's not. Because if you kill boars, you actually make the population of new animals healthier, because boars eat a lot of babies, not just bear babies, but
A boar is a male bear. Some people don't know that.
Sometimes they think it's a pig, yeah.
Sometimes I'll put, you killed a boar, and people think, well, you misspelled the word bear, you idiot. No, actually, that one was right. That's a male bear.
Yeah. It's a boar and a sow.
Yeah.
Just like a pig.
So what with John and Jen up here, the target is older boars who have already done all their breeding, you know, and it keeps the population healthy, because those big, nasty old boars, they'll go and they'll kill other cubs. They want the sows to come and eat. A sow is a female bear, and so if she has cubs but they're not his, he wants to kill the cubs so she comes back and eat. So that's pretty much how it works.
Well, they think that boars will even kill their own cubs. They also think they don't know that the common thought was that boars kill cubs because they want the female to come back into estrus. But now they're starting to think that they just kill them for food. That they apparently in Alaska, they've done a lot of studies on grizzlies too. When they come out of hibernation, one of the first things they do is go digging into dens and pull out cubs. And they're not trying to do that to breed. They're trying to do that to eat. And it's a hard world.
They never show that on TV.
No, they don't. Yeah, I never saw that on Yogi Bear.
No, Yogi wasn't doing stuff like that.
Yeah, they all do it. Yeah. That's
real world. That's you know, it's tough out here in the wild. People don't realize it.
They're tricky animals. They're really tricky animals, and it's one of the more dangerous hunts in that respect, because you're hunting something that can kill you. It really can. And when Jen and I were on the ground yesterday, there was a bear that was 9 yards from us, behind us, sneaking up on us, trying to figure out what we're up to. And it was weird, you know, turning around and seeing this thing right behind you, looking at you, and, you know, 250-pound bear that could easily kill you. Yeah. Easily, if it wanted to.
They're strong.
They're so fast, too.
They're fast, strong people. You know, I've seen them basically get, they say, well, those big bear, they can't climb trees. Seen big bear fly up a tree almost as fast as you could run on the ground. They can go up a tree. Then they can come down a tree. Then from about 10 feet, they'll come down to about 10 feet and just let go of the tree, launch backwards, hit the ground full speed. So it's just like, people say, oh, well, just if you get in a bear problem, just climb a tree. No, second order.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. There's plenty of videos of them running up trees.
Yeah, and just the fact that they can hold a tree like this and go up, how strong, you know, how that is just, that's just claws getting in that bark, and that's just pure power.
And running up the tree.
Yeah.
When they literally can sprint up a tree faster than you can run on the ground. It is one of the weirdest things to see. There's videos of it on YouTube if you want to look. There's these hunters that are in a tree stand, and this black bear runs up the tree right next to them. And it's so shocking how fast he does it. He's just trying to see what they're up to. He just runs up to them and looks at them eye to eye. And, you know, these misconceptions about these animals. One of the big ones is that they're not good to eat. And I think that misconception a lot of times is because either people don't know how to prepare them, or they don't know how to take care of the meat once they kill it. They let it get dirty, or they let it spoil.
That's with any animal. I mean, that's, you know, deer, elk. I love when my meat's clean, for lack of a better word. But, you know, deer, elk, I don't know. I just like having a quarter that is perfect. No pine needles, no anything. And it's just, it looks like just beautiful meat. Well, you know, we took great pains with your bear just to keep that meat clean. And it's all in how you take care of it in the field, how you skin it, how clean it stays, what you do with that meat. Because people who have eaten deer, elk have had bad taste in deer and elk too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not just bear, but I think another thing is people get worried about trichinosis. That's been in the news. It's a parasite that can live in bear meat. And that, all you have to do is cook it well. And
yeah, you just have to cook it to 160 degrees.
Yeah.
It's the same with pork when you you never eat pink, like really raw, rare pork. It's because of trichinosis. It's very common. But it's interesting, bears have so much of it that 90% of all the cases of trichinosis in the United States or in North America come from bear meat, which is really weird because not that many people eat bear. When you think about, you can't buy it commercially like you can pork. You have to go hunt it or know someone who hunts it. But still accounts for 90% of the trichinosis. And our friend Steve Ranella, who told me all these facts, got trichinosis.
Yeah.
Even after all that, he still... was he eaten over a campfire and didn't... I mean, you can see. It's on his episode with... I forget the gentleman's name. I'm trying to remember his name. He's a Navy SEAL. And they went hunting together, and they shot this bear, but it was raining out, and they tried to start a fire with wet branches and stuff. And
it's tough to get that fire hot in that condition.
Yeah. They should have just saved that meat, brought it back, but they ate it. Now, if the zombie apocalypse comes... eat Steve Ranella, you will get trichinosis unless you cook them well.
I'm going to make note of that.
You never know.
And one other thing people have, I think with bear also, I mean, not everybody hunts, not everybody spends as much time as we do out in the woods here. So people don't see bear all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I have seen a lot of people, or seen a lot of comments on my Facebook or social media, says even something like, I thought bear were endangered.
Yeah.
Or... I get a lot of hate from freaking people in England who obviously don't know. Luckily, I don't cuss, because I could cuss right now.
Well, they always call you a cunt.
They do. And yeah. And they don't... What do they know about hunting over here? But they sure have an opinion. And it seems like a ton of people in England who are very fond of the C word like to chime in on why we bear hunt.
Little penis. You have a little penis.
Ego. Da 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 da.
Small man.
What are you talking about? Yeah. This is part of management. Yeah, you don't have bear in England. So why would you think you could weigh in on how we should take care of, you know, bear in this country? But there's just, you know, most people that go to Starbucks, go hang out, go buy groceries, or go to the movie, you're not going to see a bear or two in those situations. So they think, oh, there must not be very many. Meanwhile, these woods right here are loaded with them.
They're overrun with bears.
Yeah.
There's a lot of bears. Jen and I saw at least four that we heard one of them, and we saw three different bears. And this is over the course of, we were there for like, what, 3 hours at the most? And Cam, we've had nights where we saw more than that.
Yeah.
I mean, there was that one night where bears were all over the place. It's crazy. We've seen 7, 8, 9 bears in a night.
Yeah.
That's not uncommon.
They've had, John and Jen up here, where in the country they hunt, they've had nights where they've seen 20 bears.
Yeah,
and that's at one place, 20 bears. So it's
in a small location.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
you're talking about incredibly dense woods, and you know you're set up in a clearing. So in this small clearing where you can only see, the very most you could see is like you get hints of like 60, 70, 80 yards into the woods.
Yeah.
But everything, it's so dense that everything past like 70 yards is like you might see like a small black
shadow
that moves in between trees, and you think it's a bear, but you're like, what was it? Is that a bear? You see some movement. You don't really, it could be a deer, it could be anything at that distance. And in that small area, you're seeing 20 bears. There's a lot of bears up here.
Yeah.
And they decimate the moose population. They decimate the deer population. They literally will pull moose calves out of their mother's body as they're giving birth. They smell the animal giving birth. They run up to that area and they'll pull the calf right out of the body. They estimate that at least 50% of all the calves that are born out here are killed by bears.
Yeah. I know John and Jen are just driving back in their bear country there. They saw a fawn. A lot of times if a fawn and a doe is with his fawn and it gets spooked a little bit, the fawn is taught to lay down and basically hide. You know, they don't have a lot of scent, so they lay down and hide. They got the spots, cute little fawn, everybody knows. And the doe, its mother, will take off. Well, they watched a bear run right up, see this happen, run right up to that fawn and just start tearing it apart.
Yeah.
And, you know, that happens. That was just something they visually saw. That happens all over these woods right here. There's hundreds of thousands of millions of acres here in Alberta. This is big, beautiful country. Not a ton of people. Lots of bear country, and that's happening all the time. So without those, keeping those bear numbers in check, who knows? The deer and the moose would just, like you said, would be devastated. So.
And you're barely going to keep those numbers in check.
No.
I mean, we shot two of them, and we had how many hunters in camp? For how many days, and we only shot two bears?
Yeah, no, it's been a little slower this year, but they're going to get some bear on the ground. But one thing I also want to say, so we talked about the bear numbers. We talked about what it does to the elk also, and moose populations. Somebody's got to kill these bear. Who's going to do it?
It's only going to be hunters, or you're going to hire the government.
I'll do it.
You'll do it.
You will do it. Yeah, so you might not do it if you got an opinion on hunting, or you're an anti-hunter, or you're an animal rights extremist, so you don't want, I'll do it. Because somebody has to. So quit being a baby and just accept the fact that we're going to take care of it for you.
And
just say thank you.
If you don't, what happens is they get sick. And by the way, we're barely putting a dent in the population. I mean, hunters, they...
doing our best.
They'll kill some, but if you could see around us how huge this area is and how thick the forest is, you'd realize there's very little chance of you ever wiping them out. I mean, it's almost impossible. They hear you coming a mile away. They smell you coming 2 miles away.
Yeah.
Just like you don't really stand a chance. But if people are upset with hunting, how do you deal with the fact that every convenience store you drive by has animals that were in captivity their whole life, that were compressed into beef sticks and jerky and you know, Slim Jims?
It doesn't make any sense. But here's one thing that I hear. Maybe you can address this. I'm just a bow hunter, so I'm like on the intelligence ladder, I'm pretty low. But
how dare you?
So they'll say...
How dare you play yourself down like that? I know what you're doing.
So they'll say, well, you know, a cow... So you say factory farming. All they're raised, they're in this small... they're in captivity their whole life, and all they're raised is just to be killed. Well, the people will say... Because we'll say, well, how's that life any different than this deer, elk, moose, bear, whatever out here? And they say, well, those animals, that's why they're here, for support. Those animals are raised just to be slaughtered. So what do you say to that?
Well, that's really silly. First of all, that's probably the saddest existence on Earth. An animal that's raised just for slaughter. And I used to think that, like, you know, man, you've just got to buy organic free-range cattle. And those cattle are treated well. Until I went to my friend Doug's organic free-range farm and was around his cows. And those fuckers are terrified of people.
Yeah.
They know the deal. They know what's going on. We walked into the pen area where he keeps his cows, and they look at you, they fucking panic, they huddle up together, they all run. They know what's going on. I mean, they might not intellectualize it, but they know we're bad news, you know, and they know we're the reason why they're penned in.
Yeah.
In these, you know, I mean, it's a large area.
Right.
They're eating grass.
Yeah.
And it's real healthy beef, and, you know, if you want some free-range grass-fed beef. You can do no better. But it's not as healthy a life as a bear lives or an elk lives.
Out in the woods.
Yeah, that's the most ideal, most ethical life for an animal that you're going to eat. And if you don't want to eat animals, that's your prerogative. But you have to realize that even if you buy grain, anybody that buys grain, if you buy wheat, if you buy, you know, anything that grows in a field, that stuff is commercially harvested. And if you ever see how it's commercially harvested, they use giant machines. And those machines run over that field and they slaughter everything in their path.
Rabbits,
everything.
Mice.
Rabbits, mice, gophers, any kind of rodents.
There could be deer laying out there just like a fawn hiding, mm-hmm. and that just gets chopped up also.
It happens the time.
Rick, show this field right here.
Yeah, spin that sucker around. Just turn it. What are you doing? You panicking?
See that is beautiful and green, and that's agriculture at its finest. But to harvest that, animals are going to die. Guaranteed, yeah. Animals will die.
Yeah, I mean, the reality of modern life is that we need a lot of food to. I live in Los Angeles, and there's who knows how many people. There's like 20 plus million people plus Mexicans. And we have no idea how many there are. No disrespect to my Mexican friends. The idea is that, I got rear-ended by this guy the other day who was Mexican. And he wasn't legal. He didn't have a license. He didn't have, it wasn't supposed to be in the country. But there's a lot of them like that. And so they don't have a count of how many people. But all those people, so that's all. My point was just that they don't have a count of it. It's not that it's bad. Because they come in illegally. So they can just guess that it might be 5 million, it might be more. They really don't know. And out of those people, they all need to eat. And very few are growing food. So you need large-scale agriculture to feed those people. And so you're not picking individual wheat stalks out of the ground. You're not shucking, corn yourself. You go to the supermarket and buying it, and that involves large-scale agriculture, which even if you're a vegan and you think you're doing no harm to this beautiful world, leaving the smallest footprint possible, Satnam, Namaste, you're not, man. You're part of killing. It might be indirect killing or unintentional killing, but everyone's a killer. That's a fact. And
that goes with being in the top of the food chain. Humans. That brings me to another point you can talk about. We are the top of the food chain. Everything below us is to support our life. That's just the way it goes. So what do you say about species? Tell me about
speciesism.
That. Speciesism. Yeah, whatever it is.
To be a speciesist. Yeah, that's one of the most adorable things that animal rights activists love to pin on humans. By the way, they will swat mosquitoes. All those fucks. Speciesists.
So is the mosquito alive?
Yes, it is.
But it doesn't count?
No, it does not. Okay. But meanwhile, in some countries, they eat mosquitoes. I saw this place in Africa where they had so many mosquitoes that they were taking a frying pan, and they were swinging this frying pan through the air, and in doing so, there's so many mosquitoes, they're slapping them into the pan, and then they would scrape the pan and make like a mosquito burger.
I thought they're gonna make malaria stew because that's a good way to get malaria if you're eating mosquitoes in Africa.
I think if you cook them good enough to worry about it, but it's like trichinosis. They make patties out of these mosquitoes. It's really fucked up to watch because they basically had this large pan and they're just swatting these mosquitoes until they have a good collection in the bottom of the pan, then they scrape them. Why do they do that? They do that because they're hungry. It's a hard, hard life.
There's no protein. I mean, for natives over in Africa, protein is like gold. Just finding something that's going to sustain life. Protein, we have burgers, we have bear steaks. They don't have that.
And it's interesting, like, when people go over to Africa, like, say if they kill a large animal in Africa, there was a big thing recently, this woman killed a giraffe, and all these people were really angry at her because they killed this giraffe. This giraffe was a non-breeding giraffe that was a danger to the other giraffes in the area. They killed this giraffe, and then this giraffe fed who knows how many villagers. Well, if you go over there and you bring them food, like you say, oh, well, we went over there and we brought these villagers 100 meals of great protein. Oh, well, you're a good Samaritan. But if you go over there and you shoot an animal and you give that animal to these villagers, you're a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Because you're not supposed to shoot a giraffe.
Yeah.
I think there's a bad disconnect that human beings have where we live in these civilized, huge metropolis areas and we get all of our food grown by other people and all shipped in. We have this massive disconnect for where food comes from. If you're delivering food to the home, like Jen, you were talking about one of the things that you guys did that was really cool was you took meat when you went to Vegas. You guys flew from Canada to Vegas and you donated a bunch of meat to local shelters.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's amazing. I mean, you did that out of the goodness of your own heart because you're really good people. And you flew down. What was it? What organization was it that you gave it to?
It was actually Salvation Army in Vegas. Always follow them, and we like to give stuff. We have a lot of extra, and we seen that they had a meat shortage, and we had an abundance. So by us hunting and our hunters hunting, we had an abundance of meat. So we decided we'd bring a couple hundred pounds down to the shelter down there, and it fed I think 500 or 600 people.
That's amazing. And when you think about it, like you guys paid to fly that stuff from Alberta all the way down to Vegas and give it to those people. But there's still people that will disparage hunters because the way you got that meat is by shooting it yourself. We're crazy. It's a crazy thing.
How many anti-hunters are doing stuff like that?
Very few.
For a fellow man. You know
Very
what I mean?
Few.
That's, nobody, I could see people saying, I'm not doing that. I'm not paying all that extra baggage. Most people wouldn't pay to have the meat shipped down there. You go through the extra, you're going to Vegas. Going to Vegas. Who wants to haul meat to Vegas? People who want to are people who care about fellow man and helping.
And that's what hunters are.
That's hunters. You know, I've seen it over and over again on my social media. I sell my bows or auction off my bows to help people who need help. Hunters have the biggest, most generous hearts of, you know, I guess I can't compare to everybody, sort of every other type of person, but hunters, man, on my page, been so giving, so generous, and give, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, really, just to help somebody they don't even know.
Well, I think people have a bad connection to hunters because in movies, a lot of times, hunters are portrayed as these rednecks who get drunk.
Yeah,
and they go out shooting these animals, and they're mean, they don't care about them, like the hunter that killed Bambi's mom, you know? Like, this is how people portray hunters in a lot of ways, in movies and cartoons and whatnot. And, you know, unfortunately, there are people like that in all walks of life. You're going to...
There's bad people in everything. Yeah.
There's bad cops.
Yeah.
But if you think about how many cops arrest people every day and how few instances actually get into the news, like, of something going wrong... What people don't think about is how many good cops there are out there. It's predominantly good cops. You think about how many firemen get praised for what they do. You know, it's rare. It's rare that people focus on the good aspect of things.
Yeah.
People love to point out the flaws in one individual and attach that to the entire collective group of people that participate in the same thing. And that's, you know, that's what people do when it comes to... hunters, for whatever reason. It's very convenient. I mean, I've had people give me shit about hunting, and then I go to their Instagram page and I see pictures of burgers and steaks, and I'm like, you fucking dummy. Do you know what you're doing? You're paying someone to do it for you.
Yeah.
If you're eating protein that comes from animals, somebody had to die.
Well,
it's just a fact.
The way I see it too is, I don't know. It seems like hunters, I think it's very appealing to be a self-sufficient, not just man, human.
Yeah.
Just to be somebody who can go out and say, hey, I'm going to go out and I'm going to provide for myself. I'm not going to rely on anybody. I'm not going to rely on somebody to stock that supermarket to make sure there's something for me to buy or to make sure McDonald's has burgers. If I need to, I'm going to go out. I'm going to provide for myself. I'm going to survive out in the woods. I'm going to kill. I'm going to butcher. I'm going to process. I'm going to do the whole thing on my own. To me, that's appealing.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. As it took, when I came up, it was kind of a transition into a man. I felt like when I could do that, I was just like, that's part of becoming a man. Now I just see it, I think it's just part of becoming person, you know, because I see women doing the same thing, and I just think it's empowering. I think it's important, it's empowering, and it gives us perspective that people who haven't done that or can't do that don't have.
And even if you don't like hunting, grow your own vegetables. I mean, growing your own vegetables.
I was going to say grow your own balls.
No. No,
because hunting
it's
does very, that.
It's hard to grow your own balls. You either have them or you don't. I mean, well, I guess you
but
kind of...
Say they haven't dropped. That's what I say.
Oh, I see. I see what you're saying. Yeah, self-sufficiency is very underrated. I mean, it's the reason why all those prepper shows exist. It's not just because people are worried about the world ending. They want to know that they're okay without everybody else. They want to know that they're self-sufficient. And I think that when you have a meal that comes from an animal that you took from the wild yourself, that it's a very intense connection. The food that I cook at home, when I cook food that I from an animal that I killed, that is a very, very different feeling than going to the supermarket and buying something that comes wrapped in plastic and then bring it home and have no connection whatsoever to turn and look at these animals, Rick.
Yeah, right here.
All these animals that are in the field. This is where most people are getting their food from. You're getting your food from these animals that are wandering around.
Yeah, this is actually even better than most factory farm. I mean,
way better.
These things are out. They're actually eating some grass out there. Yeah,
they're wandering around, and this like.
But still, that's not running through the mountains.
Yeah, it's not nature.
No.
What we're doing is, we're dipping our toes into the wild, and then we come back with meat.
Hey,
we're
participating. But what I was going to say is, you talked about providing for your family. I mean, I think it's an important. You put that your plate full of meat on the table and your wife and kids who don't hunt, you know, and you say, your kids know, daddy went out, this is a bear he killed.
Yeah.
We're eating it.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
It is a big deal. It's a good feeling. It's a feeling that's very difficult to describe. You can't recreate it. It doesn't come any other way. The only way you get that feeling is by going out into the wild and getting an animal, killing it, taking care of it yourself, cutting it up, you know, and cooking it, and then eating it. And it's a weird connection to food that you don't get in any other way. And I never got until I hunted. I never felt like that about the food that I cook, ever.
Because yeah, you've only been hunting now for...
Since 2012.
So three years?
My first hunt, not even the third year.
Yeah.
My first hunt was in November of 2012, so it's not quite even 3 years.
You know, and I put up a picture of your bear today, so you probably got a lot of hate, by the way.
But more love than hate, believe it or not. The tide has turned.
Yeah.
It's because of these conversations and these arguments where people have to realize, like, you're not beyond criticism for your own life, and you're pointing this ignorant finger at people for hunting ethically, legally, responsibly, morally, doing the right thing, putting in the hours to practice, making sure that, you know, these animals are killed in a humane way. You're not doing that when you're going to McDonald's. You're just not. You are participating in this gigantic factory farming system where these animals are penned up in these horrible ways, and you're buying food from them, and you think that you're morally righteous and that you're beyond criticism, and it's foolish. And it's part of that disconnect that we were talking about with food. I don't think eating another life and not understanding that you're eating another life is even remotely healthy. And it's one of the reasons why these people that are anti-hunters that also eat meat are so childish. The reason why they behave so childish, they say things like, I hope someone hunts your family. Yeah. And then you look on their fucking Instagram page and it's filled with dead animals.
Yeah.
Filled with chicken cacciatore. Would that come from a fucking chicken plant, you douchebag? No, it didn't.
Chicken tree?
Yeah.
No.
Someone pluck it? Yeah, they plucked it. They plucked it with a fucking machine.
It was dead.
Yeah.
Had its head cut off. But yeah, no.
It's just, it's unhealthy. It's nice that we can do it. It's nice that, you know, some people have jobs that require a lot of time to take care of their family. And they have a lot of, I mean, you shouldn't be required to go out and get your own meat. But I think it would do a lot of people who do eat meat a world of good to understand where your food actually comes from. Because most of us are completely ignorant of it. And this is coming from my own personal experience. I didn't grow up a hunter. I didn't start hunting until I was 44 years old. So it's, or 45, I guess. I didn't know. you know, I knew that there was something wrong. Like, my thoughts on it were always that, like, this just feels weird to just... I knew that there was always some strange disconnect that I was sort of peripherally aware of.
So, did you have an opinion on hunters? Did you have a negative opinion on hunters before you became, quote, one of us?
No, I never had a negative opinion. I've been watching hunting shows for a long time. Okay. I always fished.
Yeah.
You know, I've been a fisherman since I was a young kid. And, you know, I used to fish every day when I was real young. Before I got into martial arts, I loved fishing. And I would eat my own fish. And I always felt it was very satisfying to catch a fish and then cook it for dinner and then feed my parents and my sister. I feed them the fish I caught. I loved it. It's very satisfying. But, you know, I didn't have anybody to take me hunting. I didn't know where to turn, you know. And until I went hunting with Ranella, I'd just been thinking about it for the longest time and talking about it and trying to figure out how to go about doing it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm busy. It's hard for me to venture into new things like that. And I feel like in that way, a lot of people can relate.
Yeah.
Most people that are listening.
I see a lot of comments like that.
Yeah.
That people want to get into it or because they've heard us talk on the podcast, they got their first bow, and now they want to transition into becoming a hunter. You
mm-hmm.
know, it's appealing. But it's a big process. I mean, it's not impossible, but it takes time for sure.
Well, there's some outfitters that will specialize in that, like Mike Hawkridge from Big Country Outfitters, the guy I shot my moose with. He's done a lot of that, where he'll take someone who's never shot an animal before. They might not have even ever shot a rifle before. And he'll take them through all the steps. He'll show them, this is the safety. This is how you put a bullet in the chamber. This is what you want to make sure that, you know, the gun is resting on your shoulder. He'll take them through all the steps,
yeah.
Gun safety, the whole deal. Teach them how to fire the gun. Teach them where to hit on the animal. Teach them how to pull the trigger, you know, how to breathe. And then, you know, take them out and try to get them to harvest their first animal.
Well, that's to me, you know, so this is like, I guess, that next level, but that's one reason why I love coming up here with John and Jen, because for a bow hunt, this is a great first, like, beginning type bow. It's still super intense, but it's more controlled in that you're not going to have a long shot. It's generally going to be pretty close. There's a number of animals, so you're going to have opportunity, and so I like to promote this. I like to be up here with a lot of new hunters. I like to bring people. I've shared, you know, now 2 years with you, watched you kill bear, watched you go from not ever having killed anything with the bow to now have killed 3 black bear with your bow, and that means a lot. For me personally, that means, I mean, I didn't kill a bear on this trip. I didn't. I hunted one day last night, no big deal. All I know is I see a camp full of people who have never bear hunted. I see you. I see guys who are just so excited to have their, hopefully taste their first hint of success in the bear woods, and to me that means 10 times more than if I would have killed a bear on this trip. And that's, this hunt is, I think, a perfect precursor to a long bow hunting career, because it sets you up for success, and that's why I love it up here.
Yeah, well, one of the reasons why this place is so packed up here is because of you and your social media presence, and because of this passion that you have for spreading hunting and letting people know. First of all, letting people know how great John and Jen are, how awesome their outfitting business is. It's just like, if you couldn't pick a better place to be as far as the quality of the people. I mean, John and Jen, their family, are amazing. They're just so cool. And this place that they have is just so special. Even when we're just driving around.
There's a coyote hunt right there.
Oh, wow, yeah. When we're just driving around and we're, you know, looking at the woods, like, God, it's so beautiful up here.
Yeah.
It's just, it's an amazing place. And that passion that you have for bow hunting is what leads all these people to this camp. I mean, everybody at camp yesterday had Keep Hammering hats on and Ramp It Up shirts on. I mean, they're all like Cameron Haynes disciples. And that message that you're spreading is very positive and infectious, and I've seen it, like, last year. I mean, this year, we left before this current group. We got there before them, and we're leaving before they've had success yet, but they've seen a lot of bears.
Yeah.
These people saw bears for the first time in their life, and they had these looks on their face like, Jen and I drove by this guy named Randy yesterday, and he was telling us, I saw five bears. Five bears came near the... And he, this dude had saucer eyes. Because he's out there in the woods by himself, sitting in this tree stand, and these bears are all around him. And he's just mesmerized by this experience.
That's intense.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. No, it's, there's a camp full of guys just like that who... And one of them, Ed and Kay Westbrook are up here, and I think Ed, you know, he hasn't killed a bear yet, but I'm pretty sure he told John that already the hunt was everything he'd hoped it would be. he hasn't killed a bear, but just the camaraderie, the camp life, the discussions, the people, I don't know, it's just, it's all so positive, and it's, I feel very proud just to be a small part of it. It's so
well, you're a large part of it, and I think a large part of the quality of the people that are coming to these trips is because of you. You know, it's because these people are fans of yours, and they like the way you carry yourself and the passion that you have for hunting. And I found that when people have passion for things, for anything, that passion is infectious. You know, like I get into people like that are really passionate about making cabinets. I like watching.
Yeah.
I watched a guy make knives the other day online. I was watching this knife maker. He's hammering the steel. And I don't want to make a knife.
Yeah.
I'm not making any
fucking
knives.
But he was into
knives.
It. So he you were into
exactly.
It.
Exactly. Yeah. His passion was infectious. People love when people are into things because we know that that feeling is a great feeling. The feeling of being really passionate about something is a great feeling. And you have a deep passion, a deep connection to bow hunting. And I have it now, too.
Yeah.
And I have it because of you.
That's awesome. Yeah, I loved that you said that. I think last night we came in late last night to Swan Hills, I think 2 in the morning maybe. And you were still talking about just how much you love bow hunting. 2 in the morning, long day, everything. We've had a long week, and still that excitement. And
I love it.
It's amazing.
It's very intense. It's very primal. It's very rewarding, and it's very, very exciting. You know, it's also there's a lot of discipline involved. Keeping yourself calm when you're at full draw on an animal, and you know this is the moment. You know, this is the moment you've been practicing. This
for
is the
months.
Moment you've shot thousands and thousands of arrows over and over again. Just and in that moment of releasing that arrow, when you're practicing, you're not thinking about anything else other than that arrow hit that target. And there's a very zen quality to that that I think a lot of people aren't aware of. So even if you don't want to hunt, get into archery.
Yeah.
Archery is an amazing discipline, and it's an amazing practice. It's like a meditation in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it is. Well,
like that shirt that you sell. I love that shirt. The depressed face.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then plus archery equals a smiley face.
Happy face. Yeah, it's pretty simple. That's the kind of math I'm good at right there. Yeah. Well, and I do want to say, so next year we're going to do the same camp again, and it's just amazing. And even guys who have killed bear before, this isn't just for a first-time type bow hunt, because I've killed a lot of bear, and I still live for this hunt. And what I do, I like getting on the ground. You know, as you know, that's kind of what people who, like first-time hunters, I think it's a good idea to get up in the tree stand, watch the bear come in, see how they react, learn how to sex them, which means determine whether they're a boar or a sow. That takes a little bit of practice. So it's a good idea to get up in that stand and just kind of get into the bear hunting mindset. You know, we come out from this busy life, all of a sudden you're in the bear woods, planting the bear woods, and it's just, it is so new, so intense. It's a big deal. So, but once you've done that, I like hunting on the ground. I like being eye to eye with these things. And there's going to be a risk. There's a risk in everything. But I feel like that's living. Living on the edge a little bit is kind of my motif, I guess. And it's a whole different deal being on the ground, huh?
Yeah, it's very intense. There's very rare moments that you get in life where you can be. I mean, Jen and I were 9 yards behind. I mean, this bear was behind us. Was it even 9 yards?
I think it was a bit closer.
Probably closer than 9 yards. To a predator, an apex predator. North America's, you know, bears are, they're at the top of the food chain out there besides people. And the only reason why we're at the top of the food chain It's because all the things that we described, the practice and the archery.
The weapon.
You know, there's a rare moment to be there with these animals. And there's something cool, even besides the hunting them, just being there and watching them.
Yeah.
We watched them fight yesterday. One boar was chasing the other boar away, and they chase each other through the woods. And
that wasn't Sasquatch?
No.
And that wasn't a death moan?
No, Sasquatch is woo.
That different. Sounded different
no,
that time.
No, it's different. Well, he's different all the time because he's not real.
Gotcha. Okay.
You can come up with a different sound for Sasquatch any day. I mean, you can make him sound like Woody Woodpecker if you wanted to. Maybe that's what he really sounds like. We don't know.
Let's check in with Les.
Yeah. But the point is that the experience is awesome regardless of the hunting. The hunting makes it even more awesome. It compounds the awesomeness.
Yeah.
Just being out there, I know we're joking around about it. Well, it's just great being out there. But it really is great just being out there.
Is,
but the goal is always to get an animal.
Yeah, that's why we're here. And well, the goal, I guess, I mean, I didn't get one this trip. I killed one a couple of weeks ago. But I still feel satisfied, you know. I mean, obviously, I wanted to kill a bear, but I'm not just going to kill a bear just to kill a bear. I want to kill the right bear. But for me, I like getting on the ground. I like being close. I like, you know, I had experiences where I had a bear right up a tree straight above me, and I just had my knife there, and that's the type of stuff I remember. No animal was harmed in the making of that experience. That's memorable to me still.
Well, we showed up and there was a bear asleep in a tree.
Yeah.
The bear had climbed the tree and was just chilling up in the tree. And, you know, we don't know how it got there. It could have been a large bear chased it up a tree, which is really common. Because there's some enormous, enormous bears out here.
Yeah.
And when they get to like 500 pounds, can they still try to climb trees?
Yeah, they'd have a hard time climbing a tree.
That weight.
But up to, you know, 300 pounder could fly right up there. Maybe a 500 would be tough.
There's some that John and Jen have seen out here. They're 8 feet plus.
Yeah.
The biggest one they've got is more than 8 feet.
Bigger than grizzly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a gigantic black bear. But that's what's walking around these woods. And one thing that's crazy about bear, especially to sit on the ground, you cannot hear these things. They don't have hooves like a deer and elk that are breaking sticks and whatnot. They have soft pads. I mean, I've sat and turned around, and right behind me, there's, I'll make sure a bag's still back there, but right behind me is a bear I had no idea was there.
Yeah.
And it's, they are so quiet and can, you know, just
they're
sneak
like ghosts.
Right up on you. They are. They're like black ghosts out there in the shadows of these thick woods. It's intense. It's awesome.
It's amazing. And again, the food like that you get from it is delicious. I argued with people to death about this. They say bear is bad to eat. You don't know what you're talking about. You can find bear that can taste a little funky if they've been eating a rotten carcass or something like that. That's all they've eaten for like a few weeks.
Yeah.
But most of them, their diet is filled with a lot of different stuff.
Yeah.
Besides eating ground nesting birds and any other animal that they catch and kill, they eat a lot of roots and a lot of vegetables
grass.
That they find, grass.
A lot of grass.
And
berries.
Apparently, I haven't had this before, but what everybody says is that bears in the fall, when they find a berry patch and they stock up on berries, they'll eat nothing but berries for weeks, is the most delicious meat in the world.
Yeah.
Brunella says it's like the best meat you'll ever have in your life. Like, it's incredible.
Yeah.
And it's just because their body actually smells like blueberries. Their fat is blue. Like, they get like a blue hue, a purple hue to their
fat. That would sell. They sell grain-fed beef, right?
Yeah.
If you could sell blueberry-fed bear, now that would be good.
And again, what you were saying before about bears, people not seeing a lot of bears, it's one of the reasons why they get angry at you for eating them. They think that there's something wrong with eating something that you don't eat all the time. But people have been eating bears forever. It's just, it doesn't happen in Los Angeles. You know, it's just rare. They don't have a commercial presence as meat.
Right.
So, you know, you could buy venison at a lot of restaurants. Venison is not out of the... People understand that people hunt and kill deer because it's the most popular animal to hunt in America.
And people see deer all the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, it's normal. And a lot of times people get mad because, you know, if they live in overpopulated areas... Well, you were just telling me that you knew there was a story near you where a guy died.
Yeah, no, another vehicle hit a deer on the road just like this. deer flew up and went right in through a cargo van's window, killed the driver, 37 years old. That happened back home. So, yeah, people get mad because deer, they hit deer, they kill a deer, but they screw up their car.
Yeah.
So, like, damn deer.
Well, if you live in an area that has ticks and deer that carry Lyme disease too, it can be horrible. I know a bunch of people that have done that. They've gotten Lyme disease from ticks. Another one Ranella got. He got fucking Lyme disease too. He got Lyme disease, Giardia, trichinosis. He's going for the big slam of diseases that you get from game animals.
That's impressive.
Yeah, some people go for super slams. Like they try to get all the yeah, North species. American sheep.
Well, it's a good diet too for him.
He's crazy. That dude's... He's done a lot of wacky
you
shit.
You got worms, bacteria, and parasites living in you. You're not going to be overweight.
That's true.
You got a lot of stuff you got to feed.
The kid is ripped too. Got to give him credit for that. But I think that in closing, we probably wrap this up. But I just want to thank you for being my mentor for this whole bow hunting experience. It's been really, really rewarding, and I really, really appreciate it, man, because without you, I would have, it would have taken me years and years and years and years to fuck it up.
Well, like I said, it's been fun sharing it with you and watching the journey and being part of it. It's very rewarding for me as well.
It's really rewarding for me to be able to talk about this and then to see these guys in camp that have heard us talk about this.
Yeah.
I mean, a bunch of those guys that came to camp this week had heard our podcast before, yeah, and we're really excited to come up here to hunt with John and Jen because they want in on this, and you know they got in on it.
Yeah,
and it's a limited amount of people. I mean, John and Jen work hard, their family work hard, but there's only so many people they can accommodate.
Yeah.
There's not that much space in the woods, like as far as like how many different areas they've cleared out to hunt. And not that many people that they have. It's all family business. I mean, we talk about a family business. Their children all work there. I mean, it's a total family business. So there's only a certain amount of people that they can accommodate.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in this, what's the website, Jen?
LivingTheDreamProductions.com.
LivingTheDreamProductions.com. And you got to get in on it as quick as you can because this year sold out just after last year's hunt was over.
Yeah, and this... We'll probably do a couple camps like this, like we did this year. I try to come in at the end of the week, the first week, and then beginning of the second week, do an overlap of two different weeks, and we just have a good time. So we'll probably do something similar. You can get a hold of John or Jen on Facebook, Instagram. You can get a hold of me, and I'll tell you how to make it happen. But I'm down for new bow hunters, new bear hunters, and just... sharing this experience with as many people as I can.
And if you're interested in archery, find a local archery shop. Almost everyone who is involved in selling archery equipment is an archery enthusiast. It's very difficult to not be an enthusiast once you get into it. And a lot of those places offer lessons. And if they don't offer lessons, they can connect you with someone who offers lessons. Go there and learn how to shoot a bow and get some practice in. It's a great hobby to have, and even if you have no desire whatsoever to go hunt, it is a great hobby to have. And like I said, it's like a real form of meditation.
It's spiritual. There's a spiritual aspect to watching an arrow fly towards the target and hit right where you want it to. It's changed my life, so it's powerful.
And I think these things, like whether it's the hunting aspect, the feeding, the satisfaction that you get from feeding yourself and feeding your family with this meat, and even archery itself, I think there's a primal reward system that's built in our DNA, because for thousands of years, that's how people acquired food.
Yeah, we're, as you said, we're not designed to sit in cubicles.
Yeah.
We're designed to take on big challenges. Our bodies are designed... we can prepare our bodies and minds and spirit for the ultimate test, and this just gets us that much closer to why humans are designed the way we are.
And if you follow Cam on Instagram, Cameron R. Haynes, you'll see this is not just something he does like a couple days a year where he takes a bunch of people out. This is something he lives all year round to prepare himself for. I mean, Cam is constantly updating his Instagram because he's constantly running and lifting, working out, and getting his body prepared to be able to take on the challenges of these tough hunts, especially like the elk hunt that we're going on in September.
Yeah.
It's not easy. You're climbing mountains and you're bringing back hundreds of pounds of meat if you're successful.
Yeah.
And if you're successful, you're successful because you put in thousands of hours of shooting arrows and practice. And without that, there is no success. And I think that's also a great thing that you provide. You provide a lot of inspiration to people because you live it. You're not just out there running your mouth, talking, trying to pump people up. You can do it. You're out there doing it, and you're saying, come do it with me.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not a special person. You know, you're not a special person. We're just people that are out there doing it, and you can do it too.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thanks for this is kind of an impromptu podcast.
Yeah.
I think it turned out pretty good.
It's great. We're driving to the airport right now to leave the dream. and head back to the civilized nightmare.
Yeah.
But it's been a great time, and I had a blast. I can't wait to do it again next year.
Good job.
All right, brother. Bye, everybody.
See ya.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning into the podcast, and thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to Ting. Go to rogan.ting.com and save yourself $50, you savages. Thanks also to Blue Apron. Blue Apron, yummy, delicious food that you can cook yourself very simply, quickly, and easily. Go to blueapron.com/Rogan, and the first two meals are free. So go to blueapron.com/Rogan and check it out. Thanks also to onnit.com. Go to O-N-N-I-T, use the code word Rogan, and save 10% off any and all supplements. All right, my friends, thank you so much for all the love. Bye-bye. Big kiss.